the head's a tough place to be. I mean, like you were talking about, I mean, we need to stay in the moment. And fear is something that we choose, something we manufacture, something we, it's a choice. You can choose to be afraid or not. It's when we talk about the, think about the past or the future and not in the moment.
So we're sitting here now in this conference room in the middle of Lisbon, Portugal, for the Web Summit, and actually we're very close to your home, where you live, in Nazaré, where there is the biggest waves in the world, and they're happening out there right at the moment as well, because it's one of the great moments of the season. So everybody's probably out there waiting for the right moment to come. First of all, I want to say, well, thank you for joining. That's really, really cool, and. To begin with, what is it that you're most proud of in terms of your legacy? Is it to have found the Mount Everest of the water and surfed it and pioneered it? Or is it really to have been that world record holder for such a long time?
The proudest moment in my career, it was actually in 2002. I got this way. I'd been training really hard, focusing and working on getting into a 20-foot barrel, 40-foot barrel, and it all came together on this one wave. The surfer put me on the perfect, on the driver put me perfect. I came down, and you can run. We can all run and be safe, but it takes a lot to go back. And I went back, and then the lip was coming, and the last second, I snuck under, but it hit me like three times. So now I'm in this thing blind, and I'm just in this huge cylinder, and I'm coming, driving, and I can't see, but I'm thinking, I'm going to make it. And all of a sudden, it starts sucking backwards, and I'm falling. Lucky I'm in the straps. So I'm falling back, and then right when I'm about to fall, I'm still thinking, I'm going to make it. And then it went silent. And the wave has this compression cylinder, and it's sucking back like a backdraft. Hurricane force wind. So right when I was about to fall, it picks me up, and I'm gone. Nobody can see me. And it throws me, and I land outside of the barrel. I look up, and I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. It was the most amazing. Yeah, still today, the best experience I've had in the water. And it was my most defining wave at that part of my career.
Well, thank you very much. I was just in that wave with you right there. the way you passionately took us through that.
Amazing. We all surfers want to be in the barrel.
Yeah.
And I've been focusing on it for a long time, and it finally happened. And so I named my child Barrel. My son, his name is Barrel as well.
Cool.
So he's there. He doesn't have to go into the 20-footer unless he wants to.
That's cool. Nice story. And so you were 8-time world record holder. Is it really 8-time world record holder, or is it just 8 years in a row that you were the world record holder?
It's kind of weird. It was 8 years, but every single year after I broke the record, somebody said they beat me, and somebody said it, and then the media grabbed a hold of it, and the whole world thought my record was broken, and everybody's going, your record broken, I feel so bad for you. And I'm just like, actually, they judge it in May at the Billabong Awards, and every year they didn't beat it. So it was like every single year was this big thing, and I probably should have celebrated every year that I didn't get beaten and that I got the record again for another year. But they probably would have taken it away from me earlier if I had kept celebrating it.
Maybe take the listener or viewer through. I think that's the best thing to do, because of course all of my listeners, viewers are not necessarily surf experts. But can you take us through like exactly the challenges that there are to ride the biggest waves out there in the world? Of course, it's like extremely dangerous and everything, but what is the challenges of the moment of getting it right? Like what goes into it when you're out there, making sure you get the right wave, making sure you got the timing perfect? Can you take us through all those steps to really show us how incredibly difficult it is? And it's not just being brave that matters. It's really being a master of it that's important.
You think about paddling or towing? Like, can we paddle up to about 60
feet? No, tow. Let's go for the big ones.
Okay.
Let's go for the huge ones.
There is a lot of preparation, and it starts with getting comfortable and liking you got to like to be underwater. You got to like getting pounded because you're going to be underwater. You end up underwater a lot. The preparation ahead of time, you know, you train. If you like, you have a coach. And it's physical, it's mental, and somewhat spiritual. You're always kind of soul searching for meaning and why. I think on the days of the big days, if you got to, I like to focus on accomplishing something on those days. So I'll figure out what I want to do that day. And Nazareth's always like the big way, but I like to get, my goal is to get in the barrel. So you get your team. It's a team. There's the driver, the safety driver, and then maybe another safety driver on three different skis. Then you have a guy in the cliff with the walkie-talkie. It's usually my wife guiding us. Ship-to-shore communication. Then you have all the video guys and the quads and the fire truck and the ambulance. And it's pretty, it's a little Formula One team of the water. The days as you're getting ready, I like to breathe a type of breathing that oxygenates you. And there's either three in and 10 out. And you do that as long as 3 minutes of that, you're pretty hyper-oxygenated, but you got to breathe in with your nose because the only way to activate the fifth lobe of your lung is breathing in with your nose. Otherwise, it doesn't even get activated. That's a whole other oxygen source. Then there's a new technique we're using now. It's called Wim Hof, and you just you can get hyper-oxygenated beyond really quick. You can do that right before your wave.
But what do you need that for?
When you're underwater, you want to be able to hold your breath as long as you can and always have been comfortable underwater. I always enjoy my underwater rides.
So a lot of it really is preparing for the possibility of going under.
Yes.
So it's really preparing to be able to save your life in that most dangerous of situations, yeah?
First, you prepare for success.
Yeah.
And focus on your task at hand and making it, but you have to be a risk technician and evaluate all the things that could go wrong, figure out solutions. And the most challenging one of all is getting pounded for a long time underwater and then another wave and then another wave. And then, you got to be able to hold your breath for continuously and stay calm.
If you know that you've done your utmost to prepare for if it goes wrong, it will give you a comfort as well, no?
Total
and
comfort.
And a relaxation, no? Because you know you're ready for going under and it won't be a problem. And so that will help you focus your mind on having the success, won't it?
100%. That's all of it right there. And when you're confident and comfortable, you can achieve much, it's more natural. You're not fighting, you're going. You're following your heart. You know you're ready, you're prepared.
And so for preparing for going under, there's then two things. Yeah, there's first of all to not be scared. Yeah, when you're going under, so to learn to like it, but that also comes in itself when you're prepared, right? Because then you know when you're under that it's not a problem. You'll be okay because you've done everything to be able to cope with it perfectly, right?
Yes.
So that's how that comes about. So then when you do go under, you're not scared in that moment, which then again helps a lot to cope with it, right? So it's like a snowball, positive snowball effect, yeah?
Totally. If you panic, you're done.
Yeah. And therefore, holding your breath is like very, very important, yeah? How long do you probably have to hold your breath if you're under?
Not that long. I'd say like 30 seconds is a kind of, 15 is average, 30 is kind of long.
Yeah. But what if you get another wave and you have to stay on longer?
Then you're at a minute and a half.
Well, that can happen, right?
Sometimes three.
We need to prepare for that.
Yeah.
And when you went, one of your biggest chances was in Maverick, 2016. How long were you under there?
The pain was so intense, and it was more of a normal wipeout. Like I've had a lot of those, okay. And so I was like, I mean, literally, I paddled, came down all perfect, and then the wave just sucked me up, and right when I hit, shattered my shoulder in 10 pieces. The nine. Head and nine, shaft off the head, stuck in my pack, and now I'm underwater. I was really on fire. I'd been surfing Nazare for 6 years straight and had no desire to go anywhere. That was all my focus. Before that, I had to surf every swell everywhere in the world if I had the ability to get there.
Yeah.
And I had the ability to go anywhere after Nazareth. Everything fell in place and I could pretty much do whatever I wanted. And so now I was back on fire. I'm going to go ride waves around the world. It's a little bit of a wrong motive. I wanted to be in the contest. So I was over there trying to prove that I should be in the contest instead of just there for fun. And underwater, I remember as soon as I realized it was broken, the first thought was, man, I should have been doing more yoga. I was mentally and physically strong, but I hadn't been doing enough out of the water training. And then the next thought was, I hope it's not dislocated. I hope it's broken, because a break heals pretty quick. Dislocations, so you've got to get surgery and all this. Yeah. I didn't want it to be careful. Your mind is so powerful. You got to be careful, because I didn't want it to be broken in 10 pieces.
Is it okay just to go back a little bit again into that preparation of how you can hold your breath longer underwater?
Yeah.
So you do a lot of yoga, you do a lot of breathing exercises. Can you take us through that a little bit more? You even run around in the park and do crazy stuff and hold your breath in between extreme exercise or something to prepare?
There are so many amazing tools for holding your breath now. So many new techniques and amazing people that have figured out different ways to hyperoxygenate. In the beginning, I would do all my training at home, and then I would go to this park that was about a mile from my house, and there's a quarter mile track. So I'd run the track, and on the last straightaway, there was four or five benches. And at each bench, I'd stop and do push-ups, dips, and leg ups, 10 while holding your breath. So you do 10 push-up, and then go to the next dips, and then do 3 breaths, or just 2 breaths. Like, okay, you pretend you do the push-ups, and then you pretend the big wave's coming, another big breath, dips, and then pretend another big wave's coming, and leg ups, and do 3 rounds. And at the end, you're almost passing out, and then you do that at each bench, and then run. It's safe because you're not underwater. If you pass out, you'll be all right. But then we would do hold our breath, rock running underwater with big rocks all summer. Now, there's these new tools that I've integrated, and the Wim Hof is just the most amazing, and the 3 in, 10 out when you want to just be more zen and relaxed.
What is the Wim Hof?
It's the just hyperventilating. If it's not hyperventilating, it's nice and controlled and even in all the way out, and scratch your gut, and then all the way in. And you should use your nose, because then you're using the 5th lobe. But the one thing that I've integrated in the water right before you get pounded is when I'm in the water and I'm getting ready to get that, I know that wave's going to come, or I want to track that wave. I breathe all my air. I get on my board or just kind of lay there in the water, breathe all my air out. Squeeze all the stale air out. And then belly breath, chest, and then head. This is another quarter tank right there that most people don't utilize. So you do that 3 times, and a third time just, and then, and as you open your eyes, you connect to, I used to connect to the highest tree that I would see, and then started connecting to the water, and then I was like, why not connect to the universe? Just boom. And as soon as I'm done, the biggest, whatever I'm looking to attract shows up.
So this is,
it's reset. It's reset.
Oxygenating your body to the maximum.
That one is after. This is just reset.
This is a meditation.
Slow that mind down.
This is a meditation, focus, yeah.
And attract and receive.
To get into the moment and be present.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Then when you're got that wave and it's not going right and you're at the bottom and it's getting ready to explode on you, you can usually at that time you don't have time to go do the all the air out and all the air in, so you just take your biggest breath and then you're pounded, and then when you come up, if you have time, you want to breathe all your sterile air out really quick, and then most people just, but you got to do another quarter tank. That's more oxygen, more time underwater, and it's a really good practice that nobody really practices. This one guy just taught it to me recently, Mark Visser, and it's getting a full tank before you go underwater. And if you can do a couple breaths, you have time to do a couple of those before the wave comes. You're like hyperoxygenated again, ready. You're already hyperoxygenated, but you need fresh oxygenated air back in your body. So you want to blow all the stale air out, and then you're ready for a long time underwater, controlled, comfortable, and relaxed.
Awesome. I really like the short meditation and breathing exercise to get present, and it's something that all of us can relate to. And I'm a big meditator myself, or used to be, not anymore, unfortunately, but used to be in my active career. And that procedure for me was called stop thinking. And it was like a short, powerful procedure, like ritual almost. Yeah.
Totally.
Which brought me back to longer meditation sessions and brought me into this, into that space of being present in the
moment.
So
you would do that while you're meditating to go longer or just to go deeper?
No, I would practice it in my longer meditations to then be able to use it in the moment, just as you just said. Yeah. And unfortunately, I never managed to do it in the car when driving. I didn't get to that point. But then before I would go in, it would be the same. Yeah, it would be this short meditation of stop thinking. I even got to, for me, it was even just putting pressure in my hands. And that was my reminder of bringing me to that frame of mind, and taking the surroundings in and living in the moment and not being consumed by your fears or your desires of what you want to be or whatever, yeah, or of the end game of that race of standing on the podium. I desperately want
would
to stand
you,
up there.
Would you visualize that though?
Yes, but
before, but then you just kind of release
exactly,
it, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
See yourself already, one piece standing there.
Yeah, but it's a fine line. Yeah, you seeing yourself standing there. Okay, great, but it's important to visualize the way there, yeah, and really the attitude that you're bringing into it. That's the most important, yeah, to see yourself like completely present with a positive attitude and belief, of course, yeah.
I think the smartest thing you did was bowing out after you won, because most people, I don't know if it felt the best or feels the best today, you'd have to.
It does,
but
yes.
Most people have. They're on their last leg and they're, oh, I'm going to retire. And nobody really retires a champion. And that was so amazing and honorable and, I don't know, just beautiful they did that. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I can say now 2 years afterwards that it really is, it still is a wonderful feeling to go out on the absolute high like that. Still now it's carrying me.
Beautiful.
Because yeah? My last memory of my sporting career is just the strongest and most powerful ever for me, and it will stay like that for the rest of my life.
And it was the most challenging year, huh?
Exactly. No, the way
I was there for you. I was following. It was amazing. And I'm always with the Germans, so every time you lose, they go, and then when they go, and then when you finally won, oh my god, that was the best experience. Just being there has kind of got the tingles, you know, with everybody.
No, it couldn't have been more perfect, and that's why it was just great to bow out like that. Yeah. Of course, you can always have more and want more and this and that, another title or whatever. But for me, what matters is the way I feel now. And I can say that it was absolutely the right thing to do. Yeah. That's a good moment to go a little bit more into.
You know what, the career, winning the world record here. I don't surf for records. I surf because I love it. The ego's really intense and gets a hold of you and you want to be the guy. And I'm always working on not letting the ego distract me, always challenging. So when I got that wave and the world got a hold of it and saying it's this big wave, it's the biggest wave, and I told my wife and I told the team, I don't want to enter it. And sponsors wanted it in. The main reason I put it in was for Portugal. I felt that Portugal was in bad shape when I came here. Mm-hmm. The word on the street was we're collapsing tomorrow, Greece. And they needed something to inspire them. They needed something to let them know that things are possible.
Yeah.
And I was here for a couple of years and I could feel this, just holding the people down. Like everywhere we went, nothing was possible. Everybody said, let's open the lighthouse. Not possible. Oh, let's do that. Not possible. Let's go to the Navy. Oh, not possible. And I'm like, no, possible. Let's go. Open lighthouse. No, Navy. Yeah, open doors. And then this American guy comes to Portugal, gets the world record in Portugal where nobody even knows where it is, and nobody knows there's big waves there, and all of a sudden the Portuguese can attach themselves to something amazing and so proud. And Portuguese ruled the sea and actually ruled two-thirds of the world at one time. So now they rule the world as the biggest wave in the world, and they rule the sea again, and things are possible, and the country is just like a Cinderella story for me and for Portugal. It's a beautiful, beautiful. So I was so proud and so happy that they gave me the record, because you never know what they're going to do. And then so proud and to be part of this country and be part of this new, bright future for both of us.
So you're a national hero here.
I don't know about national hero, but a lot of love. A lot of love. And I love, it's mutual. And it's beautiful. And it brings me to tears at times, just when I walk down the road and people are, when a big crowd comes, I get overwhelmed. Like, well, I mean, I'm not a shy person, and I don't mind some attention. I'm a Leo, but when too many people come, it's overwhelming with emotions, just like emotions.
That's a good moment to move on to a little bit more into the purpose direction. First of all, you're like unbelievably driven, huh? I mean, really extreme. And all through your life, like you were, I saw that you could never rest still. You were always like, even was it a certain element of fear that you'd miss out on that big wave? And you could never sit still without thinking about missing out on the big wave.
FOMO.
Yeah, exactly. Is that
without Instagram?
Where does that come from? Can we go back a little bit, even all the way to your childhood a little bit, and some difficulties you experienced there?
Sylvia, I brought you a book, and actually my memoir. I won't sign it now, but I just want to show them. So in here has maybe why, but I don't know. It's Hound of the Sea is McNamara in Gaelic or Irish. So we named the Hound of the Sea. When I was a little guy,
thank you.
My mother drug us through the most, they say started at less than zero is what Paul Thoreau said, because my mother drug us through some crazy situations till I was 11. Actually, then she took us to Hawaii.
And even completely left you at some point as well.
Yes, yes. So, do you actually read it already?
No, but I prepared, of course.
So, but born in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. So East Coasters, New Yorkers, the family was from New York originally. They have this drive and this big shakers and movers, and they're always making things, you know, New Yorkers.
Yeah.
I think a little bit was from that. Then we went through this, I think more of lack. We didn't have much when I was growing up, and it made me work, I don't know, just really focus and work hard, and maybe it was lack of wanted more. Never really thought we had food on the table, but we had the worst car you could ever imagine. We had surfboards, but they were probably the worst board you could ever imagine. And it's a good question. Why? What drives me? I, you know what it is? Once I found that surfboard, nothing else mattered. It's where time stood still, where I just really loved being in the ocean, and it was my passion. It's what I love to do more than anything else. And nothing mattered on land. Your surfboard, your waves, that's what my passion.
Okay, that I understand. That's really, really awesome how you found that as well. I think you're very lucky as well, because not everybody finds that passion in that way. But what I wanted to speak about also was then afterwards, because okay, passion, but then it's you break one record, yeah, you get expectation, you get sponsors, you get the ego coming in, yeah, because you want to prove it again to the whole world that you're the best in the world. And take us through a little bit that, you know, and that's also where that a little bit extreme drive comes from, and fear of missing out and all that. That's not pure passion anymore, yeah. What is that about then?
It was for the rush. A lot of my career was for the rush. That's plain and simple. I surfed for the rush. I always had to put food on the table. At the beginning, I was so naive, so pure, and so sheltered in Hawaii. In Hawaii, we're in Hawaii. Yeah, we get just kick back and relax. But
most fun time as well then.
Yeah. Most people get to Hawaii and just kind of relax. And then I went to Alaska and rode these glacier waves and the rush went away. In the ocean, I was just comfortable. It was like, I was talking to Anderson Cooper and he said that when he gets in certain situations, he would get the rush and now he doesn't get anymore, no matter what it is, because he's been in mobs and in earthquakes and bombs and whatever. And he does, and we walked through it and he's like, I think we're desensitized after you do something. So like, you probably don't get the rush racing, or maybe now that you don't race all the time, you might, but you probably didn't get it right after a while. It became normal.
Yeah, of course. Even driving at 350 kilometers an hour,
like normal.
Becomes normal.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So I didn't get the rush. So I'm like, what the hell? Why am I doing this? And I got to put food on the table, okay, and I got to accomplish something every year, get the wave of the day or the wave of the year, the one wave wonder. But as a kid, it was just a photo for my sponsors. That's how it started. And then it went into, I worked with this marketing guy, Senior Vice President of Time Warner, who taught me everything about marketing. Unfortunately, I wasn't this beautiful, carefree soul that nothing mattered, you know, just have fun. Now, all of a sudden, I'm in my head thinking about how to make things happen, how to make things work. And the head's a tough place to be. I mean, like you were talking about, I mean, we need to stay in the moment. And fear is something that we choose, something we manufacture, it's a choice. You can choose to be afraid or not. It's when we talk about the think about the past or the future and not in the moment. You know, when we're in the moment, there's no fear. And the surfing, we're in the moment. And it's so fun and beautiful. But then when you get all this other stuff wrapped up into it, all of a sudden it's like, okay, job, passion, how do I navigate all this stuff? But
you also at some point then lost track of why you were actually surfing sometimes, yeah?
Yes.
You forgot that actually it was because you were passionate about it.
Yes.
And you let your ego and everything else take control. And actually that resulted in one of your biggest crashes that you ever had at Maverick, because you then didn't prepare perfectly anymore. You were just going after record or fear ego of missing out, needing to be there. Do you realize that? And have you done something to change that then afterwards, or to really go back and remember, okay, I'm actually not surfing for records. I'm surfing because this is what I love to do.
It taught me acceptance. I mean, it was the most painful experience of my existence. 6 months in crazy pain. What happened was I had to be on every swell before that. And if I wasn't, I was on suicide watch. It was this monkey on my back that just once, FOMO, fear of missing out. And after the crash, I was like a year later, I could surf, but it was crazy. The biggest, best winter ever happened starts the day after I get hurt. And I've been living for this for 30 years, and here it is, and I'm on the bed, and I didn't care. There was so much pain, I didn't care.
Yeah.
And it was the most challenging experience I've ever had. I had such a tough time choosing to love it and choosing to accept it, but the pain was overwhelming that it just kind of nothing really mattered. And then as I got through it, I thought I was going to be back in the water really quick. 6 months later is when everything kind of set in and the monkey was off my back. And I just didn't rush it. And my whole career, somebody would ask me to do something, as Nico Rosberg asked me for a podcast, I would normally decline.
Oh, thank you so much. That's an honor.
Because I might miss that swell, because the day might come when I'm supposed to be at Nico. Or,
wow.
Yeah, or Mercedes wants me to do an event. Sorry, no. Because I've had so many times when I've accepted and the swell of the year comes and I'm stuck at this event. So now all of a sudden, I accepted everything. Oh, let's go. Yeah, yeah. Okay, I'll be there. Boom, boom, boom. I'm everywhere doing everything, having fun without this monkey going, wave the waves, you're missing out. Happily accepting everything and meeting amazing people, having fun out of the water. It's a new life, a total new life. There's still a little hunger left in me to ride the big waves, but it was weird. For like about 5 years, I've been saying, I just want perfect waves. I don't need these. I've had enough big ones. I want perfect waves, just perfect barrels and long, long barrels. And right now, I'd be very content just riding perfect waves and having fun going around, just really focused on different things right now.
So are you thankful even for what happened that day in Maverick now in hindsight?
Yeah, totally thankful that I can be more present with my family. And that's challenging for me because I'm in my head a lot trying to figure out what to do. I'm always, for some reason, I'm super ambitious. That was what separated me. Like, my friends when I was 11 were so good and I was never going to be a pro surfer. Somehow I got lucky and became a pro. And all these guys that I looked up to that surf still surf better than me, they have no ambition. And I've always been very ambitious. So just keep, every day I wake up excited. Even though I'm not going to the water, I'm going to a podcast with Nico, you know. And it's a way of being. I go to bed really easy at like 9 o'clock, maybe 10. Last night was 12. And I wake up at 5 or 6. Yeah, right? Like a little kid. Yeah, what am I going to do? And it's like, yeah.
I think that's another cool lesson, that hard work beats talent. Do you agree?
Smart work.
Smart work beats talent?
Can.
Yeah, yeah. There's the
longevity, there's, for sure.
Yeah. I think that's an important lesson for all of us to understand.
Smart work is the way to go. I really like what you said about time management and focus. Start, like, focus on your objectives and don't let these other things, because all these, we can get caught up in the day-to-day and we can get caught up in the micromanaging. And a friend of mine, actually, the guy I'm working with, Philip, he shared something with me the other day. Like, as long as you're meeting the objective, the goal, forget. You don't have to micromanage the edit and make sure that little piece of plastic is there and this fish is over there. As long as we're getting the message across, or as long as you're getting to your target, get rid of all. Don't even let the chatter and the clutter consume you. You'll never finish anything. But what you said was good. Just, I'm the general, boom. You didn't say you're the general, but
I, no, I didn't say that. Yeah, yeah. No, that's focus is very, very important for achieving what you want in life as well. Yeah. And get rid of all the rubbish left and right, because there's so much rubbish in the world, yeah, which can take so much capacity from you.
And literally, there's so much rubbish.
Of course, yeah. Which is a great, great word to move on then. Now, what have you found a new purpose for in your life as well now? Because before, one of the big purposes was hit that biggest wave and be the best in the world at big wave surfing. Have you now found a new purpose in life?
Definitely. My father-in-law, my wife's dad, he's always been an advocate for any type of waste. But, I mean, he's just so passionate about it. And he'll be driving down the road, and if somebody throws a cigarette butt out, he'll go up and yell at the guy. If somebody throws trash out, he'll go yell. I'm like, Carlos, that's not going to get them to change. You got to tell him, excuse you, I think you dropped something over there. It'd be nice. But he's just, whew. And then so my boy, he's 4. This boy, this barrel, at 1 year old, he has his trash picker. He's going around the whole North Shore picking up trash. And my wife, since I met her, she's an environmentalist. She's a master's in environmental education. So, and she really cares about the world, cares about everything in the world. Like most good women do. Not, I don't know most of them, but women are so intuitive and so passionate and so caring. And the world is so special and hurting. And so my little 1-year-old's got his trash picker, picking up trash everywhere. And I'm just like, this is amazing. If we go to New York, imagine, he's 1.5 now. He can get around a little better. He's got his trash picker. Actually, no trash picker, by hand. He's picking up all the trash. Daddy, daddy, daddy. And we couldn't get down the street. He's picking up all the trash. And we get to the end corner. Luckily, there was a street sweeper trash lady there. I'm like, barrel, barrel, she's got it. Don't worry, it's her job. She'll take care of it. But he's still... So he got me really inspired, my wife, my father-in-law, and we're just working on sharing the challenges that we're facing and sharing solutions. And we can all come up with problems, you know. We got to come up with solutions. And I met some amazing people from Four Oceans here, and they're coming up with major solutions. And I'm really excited to potentially work with them because they're doing things. It's more about going to the school. Like, I love working with kids, my favorite. I wasn't didn't have the most fun doing talks for adults. I was just more a little nervous about it. Now I have a lot of fun doing talks anywhere. I finally got into it. But kids are the future, and kids are so, we're all impressionable.
Has that changed since you got kids yourself? Has that changed? Or
since Beryl Karen started just getting so into it, he inspired me.
Yeah.
It's so amazing what children can do for their parents. And so the kids are impressionable, and the adults as well, but you go to these schools and you share with them the challenges, share with them solutions, give them some metal straws, give them bamboo toothbrushes, give them refill bottles. The challenge with the refill bottles, we need refill stations. We got this bottle and you're going to go to the tap and not. And then we're taking a step further and challenging companies to, basically we're calling it warriors of change. We need to inspire warriors of change. And with the children, there's the future. And you got to share with them and give them tools, and then they're going to go home. Like my 21-year-old son, he was a recycle master because he learned it in school, and he was just Mr. Recycle. So all of a sudden, we're all recycling. And we're in Hawaii, there wasn't recycling 20 years ago. And so it's amazing what the kids can bring home and get the parents fired up. And then when you challenge these companies, you go, look, make an eco-friendly product or get refill stations in your stores. I mean, we just were with Thule, is my backpack or my rack and backpack, and we went there to get them to do a backpack with sustainable material. And the conversation was going, okay, my wife actually went and did, I had to stay here and work. She went there to work, first time ever. And she's doing the meeting, and the guy was tough, a tough sell, and he was kind of not having it. And then she kind of said, oh, yeah, well, we can do the backpack with the water bottle, the refill water bottle. And she just came to her as she was doing this meeting, refill stations in every one of your stores. And then he's the marketing lady that works for him that runs everything, her name's Tina, and she said he is never flustered and he's never skips a beat. And he was kind of bewildered and flustered for once, and then my wife goes, do you take the challenge? And he went, yes, I take the challenge. So it was an amazing little, she was so happy when she came home.
I'm getting into that topic quite a lot as well at the moment myself, yeah, and really following on what's going on. Finally, for all the parents listening, how do you think sport can help kids learn to take on challenges, learn to conquer their fears and things like that? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sport is so beautiful. It can change the world, as Nelson Mandela
said. Of course,
said.
Yeah.
With the kids, I mean, I had a really, for me, I like to work with kids who have challenging situations and disadvantaged children, orphanages, or I haven't gone to Africa yet, but I'm starting to work with Waves for Change, and they have this organization where they get the kids in the water, and then they have workshops, and I think it's even day-to-day. I think they have a daily program. I'm going there to learn all about it. But sports can use teamwork in certain sports, and then it's individual pride and success. And with the surfing, I go with the kids and share my story first. And so with the disadvantaged kids, so we kind of connect. Like I had food, but my mom didn't have a job. We didn't have anything really. So we connect. I told them some crazy stories about my childhood, and so the things that I went through, nobody should have to go through. And, then we connect, and my goal is to then get them in the water and make sure they surf. They leave that beach surfing, so then they're empowered. Like, wow, he pulled it off. We went out, we surfed. We can. They're empowered, so they go into life kind of empowered that things are possible, everything's possible. It doesn't matter where you start, and don't let your past define you, or your present or your past define you.
That's nice. Nice ending there, because that sport really gives you self-confidence for life as well.
Yes, right? It kind of recharges your battery.
And helps you believe that you can do great things as a child growing up, yeah?
Yes.
That's very powerful.
I don't want to, lack of a better word, it's kind of selfish, because when you work with these kids, you get so powered up and recharged, and then you're ready to go ride the next big wave.
Of course. No, I mean, we all have our egos to satisfy, but it's really a combination.
I don't have ego. You have ego.
Yeah, rather big one as well. Yeah. But it's the combination. Huh? Of course, you give, yeah, and you know that you're going to get back as well. And I like that's the, fine. That's fine.
It's fun when, I mean, it's real beautiful when you don't expect anything and you don't really know. But yeah, you kind of do know, right? Yeah, yeah, you give and you get. It's a law of attraction and the universe, positive, negative.
One last thing. I see the Mercedes star on your chest. Of course, that makes gives me a warmth because they helped me to my greatest sporting achievement in my life. So you've been working with them for a long time?
Yeah, since 2012, they actually, as a surfer, we don't have companies like Mercedes knocking on our door. They knocked on my door. So
that was I remember when Mercedes started going into surfing, and I thought, that's cool. That is smart because you need to, it was such an old brand. And they needed to go young and go cool and wear better than in the surfing world.
I was so proud and honored and like first just surprised. And then they came to me with the campaign and they said, look, the air, land, and sea, three-pointed star.
Wow.
So you didn't even know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, see, I didn't know that when they told me about that. And air, land, and sea is... And we want to get back in the sea with you. We don't do much in the sea. And I'm just like, okay, so you guys are going to just park the cars there and watch me? And then they're like, that's what I'm thinking. And they're like, we want to build the ultimate board with you so you can survive these waves. And the next day I was on a plane to Germany and I go into the design team. You've probably been in there, right?
Yeah.
With all these 7-foot tall Germans and they're running around like kids in a candy show. Whoo, we're going to build a surfboard. We're going to build a surfboard. Yeah. They got this crazy big campaign on this all hand done, and then we go to the wind tunnel and check the board and figure out what materials would be good to use, and then I come back to Portugal. We built the ultimate board. It's the ultimate board. Everybody,
really, yeah?
Everybody in Nazaré has one now. They don't have the star, but I let them utilize our technology.
That's so cool.
The guy who just broke the world record was on one of the boards. He lived at my house, kind of like a student, so I'm real happy for him. He had a really bad fall a couple years before and kind of quit, was messed up in the head, didn't want to go back, and ended up coming back and getting a record. It was so awesome for him.
Incredible story as well, yeah, that you have such a mental block and you still manage to overcome it, get back on there and perform in such an incredible way. That's a huge achievement from him as well. And great that you're allowing him to use your technology and your development.
Pretty much everybody in Nazaré has one.
That's
if cool. They don't have it now. They had one and they took it to their shaper, copied it.
That's cool. So you've given back a lot, huh, to your community as well.
Yeah, I like to share what I want everybody to survive. My mindset was this wave so intense, I want everybody to survive.
That's a nice ending. Thank you very, very much for your time. It was extremely interesting. And we're going to maybe have a go on the new Mercedes EQ afterwards.
Yeah.
I've never been in it, so thanks to you, maybe I'll get to have a ride. And
I'm sure you can call somebody, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't yet. I've actually tried last week, but I didn't get to that point yet. So, okay. So that would be good fun.
But I'll definitely do whatever I can to get you out over there. What's your day like?
Rather packed, but it'll be okay. I'll make time.
Okay.
And dear listener, thanks for tuning in as well. Please subscribe if you haven't yet for the next episodes. And thanks for watching on YouTube. And stay tuned for the next one. Bye bye.
Aloha.